Chapter 1. I wish I was a woman of about 36, dressed in black satin with a string of pearls, Mab Chirt read aloud. That's the first sensible thing you've said, you silly twit. What are you reading? Her mother asked, flipping through an old magazine. Rebecca, Daphne du Maurier. Mab turned a page. She was taking a break from her dog-eared list of 100 classic literary works for the well-read lady. Not that Mab was a lady, or particularly well-read, but she intended to be both. After ploughing through number 56, The Return of the Native, ugh, Thomas Hardy, Mab figured she'd earned a dip into something enjoyable like Rebecca. The heroine's a drip, and the hero's one of those broody men who bullies you, and it's supposed to be appealing. But I can't put it down somehow. Maybe just the fact that when Mab envisioned herself at 36, she was definitely wearing black satin and pearls. There was also a Labrador lying at her feet in this dream, and a room lined with books she actually owned, rather than dog-eared copies from the library. Lucy was in this dream too, rosy in a plum-coloured gym slip, the kind girls wore when they went to some expensive day school and rode ponies. Mab looked up from Rebecca to watch her little sister canter her fingers over imaginary fences. Lucy, nearly 4 years old and too skinny for Mab's liking, dressed in a grubby jumper and skirt, forever pulling off her socks. Lucy, stop that! Tugging the sock back up over Lucy's foot. It's too cold to be running around barefoot like a Dickens orphan. Mab had done Dickens last year, numbers 26 through 33, ploughing through chapters on her tea breaks. Blech, Martin Chuzzlewit.
Ponies don't wear socks,
Lucy said severely. She was mad for horses. Every Sunday, Mab took her to Hyde Park to watch the riders. Oh, Lucy's eyes when she saw those burnished little girls trotting past in their jodhpurs and boots. Mab yearned to see Lucy perched on a well-groomed Shetland.
Ponies don't wear socks, but little girls do, she said. Or they catch cold.
You played barefoot all your life, and you never caught cold.
Mab's mother shook her head. She'd given Mab her height, an inch shy of 6 feet. But Mab stretched into her height with lifted chin and squared shoulders, and Mrs. Chat always slouched. The cigarette between her lips waggled as she murmured aloud from an old issue of The Bystander. Two 1939 Debs, Osler Kendall and the Honourable Guinevere Broderick, had Ian Farquhar to chat to them between races. Look at that mink on the Kendall girl. Mab cast an eye over the page. Her mother found it all enthralling. Which daughter of Lord X curtsied to the Queen? Which sister of Lady Y appeared at Ascot and Violet Taffeter? But Mab studied the society pages like an instruction manual. What ensembles could be copied on a shopgirl budget?
I wonder if there'll be a season next year, what with the war.
Most Debs will be joining the Wrens, I reckon. It's the Land Army or the ATS for folks like us, but posh girls all go for the Women's Royal Naval Service. They say they got the uniform designed by Molyneux, him who dresses Greta Garbo and the Duchess of Kent.
Mab frowned. There were uniforms everywhere these days, so far the only sign there even was a war. She'd been standing in this same East London flat, smoking tensely alongside her mother, as they listened to the radio announcement from Downing Street, feeling chilly and strange as Chamberlain's weary voice intoned,
"This country is at war with Germany."
But since then, there'd hardly been a peep from the Huns. Her mother was reading aloud again.
"The Honourable Deborah Mitford on a paddock seat with Lord Andrew Cavendish. Look at that lace, Mabel. It's Mab, Mum."
If she was stuck with Chirt, she wasn't ruddy well putting up with Mabel, ploughing her way through Romeo and Juliet, number 23 on Mab's list. She had run across Mercutio's "I See Queen Mab Hath Been With You," and plucked it out on the spot. Queen Mab. That sounded like a girl who wore pearls, bought her little sister a pony, and married a gentleman.